So good evening, everyone. Good to see you all again. So tonight, we're going to be returning to reading Dogen's Bandoa, an essay he wrote, one of the first essays he wrote after coming back from China, called On the Endeavor of the Way, at least in the translation we're going to look at. So for those of you who were not here for the first two discussions, and perhaps just to refresh our memory, since last Wednesday we didn't look at the Bandoa, we celebrated spring with poetry, dancing, drinking, songs, and all kinds of fun things like that. So let me just review a few points to bring us back into the Bandoa. So this text, this essay, is the second one that Dogen wrote that we know of, after he came back from his training in China, coming back to Japan. And there in China he had trained with, I guess you could say, the person who became his root teacher, a Chinese Zen teacher named Rujing. And Zen was very new in Japan. And Dogen felt that it was really important for him to be able to teach what he felt was the true teachings of Buddhism. But his life after he returned from China was very unstable. He didn't have a monastery, he didn't have a temple that he was really in charge of. He was kind of moving around. And so let me just read a little passage of what he wrote. We talked about this in our first discussion. So Dogen said, "Since I am wandering about, which mountain or river can they call on?" People who wanted to come and talk to him about his experience in China. "Because of my concern for them, I would like to record the standards of Zen monasteries which I personally saw and heard in the great Song China, as well as the profound principles which have been transmitted by my master. I wish to leave for students of the way the authentic teachings of the Buddha house. Indeed, this is the essence." So Dogen wrote this for us, leaving what he felt were the true and profound teachings of the Buddha way. And Dogen, you know, never emphasized that this is the Zen way. He just felt we need to really consider what is the Buddha way. So in the first couple of weeks, we saw that Dogen tells us in the essay to approach our practice by letting go of the sense of I, me, and mine, and just resting in a kind of all-inclusive awareness. This, Dogen says, is the foundation of all being. This all-inclusive awareness that we can rest in. And the gateway to what in this translation is called self-opening samadhi, or we could just say this open awareness, is simply sitting upright in zazen, letting go of our stories of I, me, and mine. Dogen writes, using quite poetic language, that our fundamental nature is nothing other than our profound interconnectedness with this dynamic, flowing universe. Furthermore, he said, the practice of letting go goes beyond the practice of letting go. In other words, we let go until there is no I that is letting go. There's no Michael or subject doing the practice, just the practice practicing, so to speak. In this way, there is ultimately no distinction between practice and awakening. And perhaps our biggest challenge in reading Dogen is that we want to understand. We want to kind of somehow nail down his philosophy, make it our own, kind of tuck it away with all the other little bits and pieces of knowledge that we've gleaned over the years. But that's a mistake. Dogen is not writing to elucidate, to say, oh, this is the truth. He's writing to force us to question our habitual views of reality, of practice and awakening, and of who we think we are. And this is his gift to us, a gift that, if we take it seriously, pushes us through our comfortable boundaries, or maybe uncomfortable boundaries, into a vast and illuminated space. So that was 2 weeks worth. So maybe now we'll pick up from where we left off. And to do that, we may have to share, because I only made, I think, about 13 more copies. But I see some people did bring theirs, so that's good.
Sure.
Yeah. Sharing will be fine, because we'll just read, and then I'll give out some paper later on for a little exercise that we'll be doing. Okay, John.
This broad awakening comes back to you, and the path opens up to help you invisibly. Thus, in Zazen, you invariably drop away body and mind, cut through fragmented concepts and thoughts from the past, and realize essential Buddha Dharma. You cultivate Buddha activity at innumerable practice places of Buddha Tathagatas everywhere, provide the opportunity for everyone to engage in ongoing Buddhahood, and vigorously uplift the Dharma of going beyond Buddha.
So I did say he wrote in rather poetic language, and he strongly emphasizes certain points, as you can see here. So this broad awakening that he talks about is actually referring to the simultaneous awakening of all things that he discussed in the previous paragraph. That when we awaken, everything awakens at the same time. So Dogen did not see Zazen, this meditation practice, as kind of like another technique, a method to get us someplace else. He tells us that Zazen does not take us out of the phenomenal world, but actualizes it. We don't transcend, we ground. We ground in awareness and stillness. And at times, maybe not much seems to be happening. And at times, maybe it feels very profound. But this groundedness is not some rarefied spiritual dimension. It is right here, as it has always been. And it is the ground of all things. Zazen, this practice, as Dogen describes it, is dropping off body and mind, a letting go of our judgments, concerns, evaluations, and expectations, and thereby opening to the eternal clarity of this present moment. And Dogen goes even further. He goes on to write that by Zazen practice, we help cultivate and share in the universal Buddha activity. In other words, we cultivate and share in the flowing boundlessness of all interbeing. And we go far beyond any conception of Buddha or awakening. Now, this may seem a little puzzling, but I think it will become a little bit clearer in the next section. Or it will become totally confusing in the next section. So would somebody read that for me, please? Okay, Nadia?
Because earth, grass, trees, walls, tiles and pebbles of the world, a phenomena in the 10 directions, all engage in Buddha activity. Those who receive the benefits of the wind and water are inconceivably helped by the Buddha's transformation, splendid and unthinkable, and intimately manifest enlightenment. Those who receive these benefits of water and fire widely engage in circulating the Buddha's transformation based on original realization. Because of this, all those who live with you and speak with you also receive immeasurable Buddha virtue. Practice continuously and extensively unfold the endless, unremitting, unthinkable, unnameable Buddha Dharma throughout the entire world of phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dogen here waxes very poetic. But what he is talking about here is the profound intimacy we share with all things. And an earlier term, a little bit earlier in the essay, same essay, Dogen refers to this profound interconnectedness of all things as inconceivable dharma. Inconceivable dharma. Earth, grass, trees, walls, tiles, and pebbles of the world of phenomena in the 10 directions all engage in Buddha activity. In other words, all these things are this inconceivable dharma. Who'd have thought? Balls, trees, grass. These two are inconceivable dharma. These two are woven into us. We are woven into them. He writes, those who receive the benefits of living in water or air or fire are also inconceivable dharma. In other words, we, all living and non-living beings and things, share this in common. Woven in this web of interbeing, we naturally are innately awakened. We naturally, innately express the unnameable and immeasurable. It's not out there. Whatever you're seeking, it's not out there. In our Zazen practice, the innate awakening is actualized. And being actualized calls forth the inconceivable dharma of all others. Now, calls forth is a little subject-object, I realize. But what this is saying is, this is the support that we give each other in our practice. This is the support we receive from the whole universe. From the very beginning of Buddhism, for example, the Buddha encouraged strong, good Dharma friendships. Ananda, his attendant, thinking about his own good friendships with other monks, wondered aloud to the Buddha whether having good friends was half the path. And the Buddha replied, "No, Ananda. Having good friends isn't half the holy life. Having good friends is the whole of the holy life." And in another passage, a little different place in the writings, early writings, The Buddha said, five things induce the release of the heart. The first of these is the lovely intimacy with good friends. To be actualized, to actualize our awakening is kind of like, you know, someone who's surrounded by good friends, people trying to help them, but they don't realize it. And then suddenly they kind of go, oh. They're not just annoying people. They're actually good friends. Now just open that to all things. How we are supported by this universe. So let's go on to the next little paragraph here. And someone else had their hand up. Okay, Jen, yeah, please.
All this, however, does not appear within perception. Because it is unconstructedness and stillness, it is immediate realization. If practice and realization were two things, as it appears to an ordinary person, each could be recognized separately. But what can be met with recognition is not realization itself, because realization is not reached with a discriminating mind.
So here's the problem in a nutshell. Like a fish in water, like us breathing air, or maybe like the blood flowing through our bodies, inconceivable Dharma is that close. But we're oblivious because it is so all-pervasive, so intimate. We don't notice it. Inconceivable Dharma is not something we make. It's not a state that we work towards. It is simply ever-present. Ever-present and ever-pervasive and boundless. We can't recognize it in the same way that we recognize other things. It's like the eye, perhaps, trying to see itself. Immediate realization, inconceivable Dharma, are not objects that are separate from us, the subjects. To perceive the great net of interbeing, we would have to somehow pull ourselves out of it and look back. But because of the nature, the very nature of interbeing, if we pulled ourselves out, nothing is left behind, because ultimately there's no separateness. There's no way to kind of pull ourselves out. That's why Dogen calls it unconstructed. It's not made up. It's not some other place. It's simply the fabric of everything. And why don't we grok to it? Maybe most of you don't know that word, grok. Do you know the word grok? No. It comes from a science fiction novel. Before most of your time, but
taken from
a writer named Heinlein, and grok meant to kind of deeply perceive and understand. I grok it, man. It was really kind of a popular expression when I was a bit younger. Okay. So let's go on and read the next paragraph. In stillness. Michael? Yeah.
In stillness, mind and object merge in realization and go beyond enlightenment. Thus, in the state of receptive samadhi, without disturbing its quality or moving a single particle, you engage the vast Buddha activity, the extremely profound and subtle Buddha transformation.
Mm-hmm. So here Dogen makes the case, and a very kind of puzzling one, at first, that practice and realization, or practice and awakening, are not two things. And when we sit still and the mind quietens and the myriad stories, judgments, and fantasies begin to drop away, we go beyond awakening, go beyond enlightenment. In other words, beyond our ideas of awakening. In receptive samadhi, this kind of quiet state of mind, where we make an effort to be aware and to let go of our assumptions, we open to the reality of our life, not shaped by conditioning. This is what Shinryu Suzuki, the Japanese priest who brought this form of practice to North America, this is what he called things as it is. His English was not too good, but actually very interesting, things as it is. We are present in the reality of this moment without adding our mental and emotional commentary. This, Dogen tells us, is to engage in vast Buddha activity. We awaken to the aliveness of the moment, and the distinction between awakening and delusion no longer makes sense. Why? Because there needs to be a person there saying, that's delusion, that's awakening. But the deeper and quieter the mind goes, that sense of I begins to slide away, becomes porous, opens up into something vast and deep. As Dogen wrote, and we have said many, many times here, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self, meaning to let go of your stories, etc. And when we do that, the myriad things come forth. The whole world comes forward. And as Dogen says, body and mind drop away. There's just the world, vibrant, present, totally embodied. Leaving nothing out. So, next paragraph.
Grasses, trees, and lands which are embraced by this way of transformation together radiate great life and endlessly expound the inconceivable profound Dharma. Grass, trees, and walls bring forth the teaching to all beings, including common people and sages. All beings, in response, extend this Dharma to grass, trees, and walls. Thus, the realm of self-awakening and awakening others invariably holds the mark of realization, with nothing lacking, and realization itself is manifested without ceasing for a moment.
Oh, thank you. I find this passage so beautiful and very moving. The whole phenomenal world in the 10 directions radiates the inconceivable profound Dharma, offering it freely, openly, with no hesitation, with no limit. The whole world is sacred, with everything offering the Dharma to everything else. And don't we feel this? When we walk in the wild, particularly, or when we stand on the beach and look at the ocean, or just rest quietly under a tree, don't we feel a sense of ease, a sense of belonging? In this passage, Dogen reminds us we are always in community. We are always in family. When we meet a living being, we meet ourselves. When we meet the grasses, trees, tiles, and walls, we meet ourselves. We understand that the community that surrounds us and the self are not different. Suzuki Roshi wrote, "Wherever you are one with the clouds and one with the sun and the stars you see. You are one with everything. This is more true than I can say, and more true than you can hear." So in these paragraphs, Dogen is striking home again and again the point of non-dualism to liberate us from the delusion of separateness and divisions and point us towards freedom and intimacy. In the Heart Sutra that we regularly chant here, the theme in the Heart Sutra is emptiness, the kind of non-self of all things. And Dogen presents here the great beauty and liberating quality of this teaching. That if there is no separate standalone self, like we habitually tend to think of ourselves as, then there is just a timeless unity of all things. So what are the ramifications of that? Let's read the next paragraph and find out. Patrick, you had your hand up, right?
"This being so, the zazen of even one person at one moment imperceptibly accords with all things and fully resonates through all time. Thus, in the past, future, and present of the limitless universe, this zazen carries on the Buddha's transformation endlessly and timelessly. Each moment of zazen is equally the wholeness of practice, equally the wholeness of realization."
Oh, that's pretty heady stuff. In another essay, Dogen addresses the concept of time in some detail, but here I think he just shakes us a little. Shakes us so that we drop our assumptions of time flowing like some great river with a clear past, present, and future. Like space, time too, in Dogen's view, is endless and boundless and also inconceivable Dharma. I think, you know, we tend to see our practice like climbing up a mountain, kind of step by step. Our eyes always on the goal, however we imagine it. So our practice in terms of time, right, going up this bloody steep mountain. But Dogen challenges that, and perhaps he's telling us from the very beginning, there is always peace and harmony and insight. From the very start, it's all here. Our zazen is not our zazen, although we tend to think of it that way. Zazen does zazen, as Suzuki Roshi said. There's no outside and no inside when we sit in our zazen. There is just one existence. Maybe we could say in zazen, we release ourselves. We finally let go of those endless stories. And we experience just one existence. Sitting down, stilling the mind, following the breath, letting go of the day's pressures and problems, entering ever deeper the present moment is really not a complicated practice. It's not like we've got a lot of steps and things to think about and stuff to do, but it does require some trust, some effort, some diligence. And it is a very profound practice, as Dogen writes in this concluding paragraph. one person read that last paragraph, and then we'll do an exercise together.
Sure.
Alex.
This is so not only while sitting, like a hammer striking emptiness. Before and after, its exquisite sound permeates everywhere. How can it be limited to this time and space? Myriad beings all manifest original practice, original face. It is impossible to measure. Even if all Buddhas of the 10 directions, as innumerable as the sands of the Ganges, exert their strength and with the Buddha wisdom, try to measure the merit of one person's zazen, they will not be able to fully comprehend it.
Mm. So Dogen concludes here with a bang. He emphasizes the unknowability of our zazen practice and the vastness of who we are. I was going to say the vastness of what we are part of, but this would not be quite right, because there's no way to tease ourselves out of this inconceivable dharma. And in case the limitlessness and unmeasurability of who and what we are has still not sunk in, Dogen writes, even if all the Buddhas of the 10 directions, as innumerable as the sands of the Ganges, exert their strength and with Buddha's wisdom try to measure the merit of one person's zazen, they'll not be able to fully comprehend it. And you thought you were just dozing on the cushion here earlier. Can you imagine the merit that you have accrued already? The scope and depth of zazen is inexhaustible. Such is the view of Dogen's zazen. Well, that concludes the major part of his explanation that he wrote. The next section that I'll talk about next week is a bunch of questions that I don't think they're actually students of his at the time, but he kind of made a list of questions, like teachers do sometimes, right, to get people thinking, and then he gives the answers as well, so we'll explore that a little bit. But I thought what we should do is consider what each of us, what our personal view of meditation practice is, and what are the questions and confusions and doubts that we have about our practice or about what Dogen writes here. Does that make sense? So,
in other words, questions are fine.
Questions are good. We need the questions,
bring
right?
Bring up your questions.
Dogen writes about, I think, 18 questions. So you should be able to get at least five or more. So grab a piece of paper if you don't have one. Let's pass those out. And I'll start passing pens out too.
Pass pens.
Okay, do you want to? Well, let me just grab a few more. Pass them out too.